Blue and white text appears, a triangular glow shining from the central word toward the right. Radiant Films International. A Braveheart SMF Storefront Pictures production. The tops of trees in various shades of green and gold make up New York Central Park under overcast skies. A young woman with dark brown hair flowing out of her floppy white beanie trudges down the sidewalk alongside the park. She lugs a bundled-up object in a blanket, shifting it to her shoulder and dashing across the street. White cursive writing appears. Carrie Pilby. The woman trots up the steps of a brownstone, then bursts into a small book-filled office. A man looks up from his desk.
Here's a surprise. Guess who's not coming to Thanksgiving?
Your dad.
He's such a hypocrite. I hate hypocrites.
I'm sorry.
She dumps the bundle on his desk, pulling the blanket away to reveal a frozen turkey.
Is this for me?
I figured you'd have more use for it than I will.
Right. Thanks.
I swear to God, the man is incapable of keeping a promise.
What was his reason?
You tell me, he's your friend.
Carrie.
He said he has to stay in London. I mean, why would anyone choose to stay in London? London's awful.
When's the last time you were in London?
When I was 12.
When your mom was sick?
Don't do that.
Do what?
Make associations in your head. I don't like London because it is cold, it is repressed, and everyone looks like they've smoked too many cigarettes.
Did you make any friends this week?
You and I both know there's a perfectly good reason I don't have any friends.
So what did you do this week?
What I normally do.
Reading?
Mostly.
And how many books did you read?
17.
And does reading 17 books in 1 week seem normal to you?
No. No, of course it's not normal. I mean, does skipping 3 grades of school seem normal? Does going to Harvard at the age of 14 seem normal? I'm clearly not normal. I thought we'd established that was the problem.
Carrie, I want you to do something for me.
What?
You and I are going to come up with a list of goals you're going to achieve between now and the end of the year. So for our next session, I want you to think about some of the things you'd like to have on that list. Things you've done in your life and enjoyed.
What kind of things do you expect me to put on this list?
For example, join a club.
Why should I force myself to go out and meet people who have lowered their moral, ethical, and intellectual standards in order to fit in with other people who have low moral, ethical, and intellectual standards?
You're such a contrarian.
No, I'm not.
A little helpful advice. One, try to stop pontificating and rubbing your exceptionally high IQ in people's noses. 2, give humanity a chance. Someone might surprise you.
She glances toward a wall.
Time's up.
Carrie, wait. You were quite late, so I don't mind going a couple of minutes
over. I do. I'm actually in the middle of reading Foucault's Archaeology of Knowledge. I highly recommend it, by the way. And if you speak to my dad, please give him the message that I don't accept his excuses or his apologies, and that hiring me a therapist is no more a satisfactory replacement for an actual parent than sending me off to college at an inappropriately young age.
Carrie goes out the door. She pops back in.
Sorry for being in.
I completely understand.
Happy Thanksgiving.
You too.
Now, Carrie strolls down a sidewalk and steps into a bustling restaurant. She takes a seat by the window, and a waiter in horn-rimmed glasses walks up.
Hey, Carrie. What's up?
Hi, Ronald.
Ronald picks up the second place setting.
Do you need a menu?
Sure.
He spots her Video Vicky bag.
Someone still buys DVDs, huh?
Someone still does, yeah. And you know what? I have never had to wait for the movie to load halfway through the film.
Ronald purses his lips and looks away.
I'll have the soup.
Yeah, sure.
He takes her menu and steps away. Carrie notices a young man smiling from across the restaurant and turns to check if he's looking at someone else. The man rises from his seat and crosses to her.
Hi there.
Hi. Look, before you launch into your moves or whatever, I just want you to know that I'm not really in the right frame of mind to make flirty chit-chat with a total stranger, even though admittedly you're quite a cute one, but I've just dealing with being let down by my dad, not for the first time, and I've just had a really tough session with my therapist.
I'm sorry. I just want to know if I can borrow this chair.
Oh.
Her eyes widen.
Definitely. Yes. Take it. Knock yourself out. Not with the chair.
He carries the chair away, and she glances embarrassedly around the room. The door opens, and a thin blonde woman enters, waving at the young man. Carrie watches the blonde kiss him and sit in the chair. Ronald walks over, holding a bowl of soup.
Do you want me to pack this together?
Yes, please. Yes.
Carrie gazes away sullenly, then sinks down lower in her seat. At night, she sits in bed under a fluffy white comforter wearing an oversized gray cardigan. She stares at the TV and eats her soup from a plastic container.
What the hell is that?
Carrie rolls out of bed and strides to her window. In the alley below, a man in an Andean chulo cap plays the didgeridoo.
Yo! Girl, music guy!
Hey!
Can you go and hold your one-man Aborigine festival thing somewhere else? Like Australia?
He smiles.
Sure.
Carrie plods into her kitchen and picks up her cell phone.
Hi, Dad.
Hello, darling. How are you?
Got your message. You're not coming for Thanksgiving. Shocker.
So sorry, darling. I really thought I could swing it, but I just can't get away. It's such an American thing anyway, isn't it? But I promise I'll be there for Christmas.
She pulls a pie out of the fridge.
It would have been nice to have a bit more notice.
But listen, I do have good news. I found you a job at the law firm of a friend of mine.
In what world is that good news? If anything, that is very, very bad news.
But it'll be good for you.
Well, I'm still 4 years ahead of my peers. She want me to be maladjusted.
She throws out the pie.
It'll be easy, I promise. It's a night job. Proofreading legal briefs. You love reading.
Not proofreading. And certainly not legal briefs.
At least it'll be quiet. You won't have to talk to a soul if you don't want to.
She plops on her bed.
If you have a better offer, by all means.
What happened to take some time?
Well, it has been a year, darling, and to be absolutely honest, it would really help if you could bring something to the table, so to speak.
Isn't there some other way?
You could get a roommate instead, if you prefer.
Okay, fine. I'll take the job.
Carrie hangs up and covers her face with a blanket. In an office lobby, Carrie steps off an elevator, pulling an earbud out. Wearing her floppy beanie, she saunters across the sterile white room toward an empty reception area.
Hello?
Carrie leans over the vacant reception counter, then hoists herself onto it to peer down at the desk. She drops off and puts the dangling earbud back in. She strolls over to the all-white furniture of a seating area and peers out a large window at the Empire State Building. The upper floors of the towering building glow with red and green lights in the darkness, and headlights blaze as cars edge down the shiny avenue far below it. Carrie turns from the view and sits in one of the white chairs. Her pale blue eyes stare off. In a flashback, Carrie walks in daylight across a Harvard quad, wearing her signature floppy white beanie, smiling as she passes other students. They ignore her and she swings her arms anxiously. Back in the sterile law office lobby, a bearded man with a hoodie over his shirt and tie drops into the seat next to her.
What you listening to?
He grabs one of her earbuds and puts it in his ear.
Wait. Isn't that from Bugs Bunny?
It's morning. I'm Peer Gynt. Edvard Grieg.
I'm pretty sure that's from one of the Looney Tunes.
Who are you?
Douglas.
Do you work here?
No. I just didn't have anyone to spend Thanksgiving with, so I've been wandering around the building hoping to find someone to share my turducken.
Right.
Kitty.
You're Carrie Pilby, right?
I might be.
Later.
Sometimes when the documents get copied and or faxed, the periods end up looking like commas, and the H's end up looking like K's, you know, like that sort of thing.
No wonder lawyers charge $400 an hour. They pay people to play concentration.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Douglas got to you first. I always try to get to the new people before he does, but he's quick as lightning.
Ooh.
I'm Tara.
Carrie.
I wish I could say he's more the exception to the rule, but what can I tell you? This job attracts a strange breed,
clearly.
Douglas toys with one of his front teeth.
You're gonna fit in just fine.
Tara glances at Carrie's frumpy outfit. Later, Carrie trudges into her apartment, crossing through the kitchen. She stops and backs up, reaching into the trash to pull out the pumpkin pie box. She flips open the container, sticks a finger inside to taste the pie, then tosses the box away again. Now, rain falls on the slick streets of Manhattan. Carrie steps into the book-filled office.
Holidays, or drag, huh?
Her therapist turns his salt-and-pepper bearded face from the window.
For some people, yes. What did you do for yours?
Nothing. Just went to work.
What? You got a job?
Well, my dad got it for me, kind of a consolation prize for not coming to Thanksgiving. But I didn't have to eat any dry turkey or talk to anyone.
Wonderful. So, how's it going with the list?
What list?
The list we talked about last time.
I have no recollection of this list.
You've got a photographic memory.
It's selective.
Excuse.
I've been very busy.
Excuse.
I haven't had time.
Excuse.
Can you stop saying...
Excuse. Well, not to worry. I made one for you. Go on, read it.
He unfolds and hands her a yellow sheet of notepaper.
Go on a date. Make a friend. Spend New Year's Eve with someone. Get a pet.
It'll help to have something to care for. Keep going.
Do something you loved as a child.
Like what?
Well, it could be anything. What did you do when you were six that you don't do anymore?
I wrote several strongly worded letters to oil companies when I was six.
Wow. Okay. How about an indulgence that you no longer allow yourself?
She shrugs.
I used to love drinking cherry soda.
Excellent. There you go.
Great. I'll drink a cherry soda and all my problems will just disappear.
What's next?
She glances at the paper.
Read favorite book.
Huh. Do you have one?
Yeah. Franny and Zoe Salinger. But I don't have it. I lent it to someone.
Can you get it back?
I don't know.
Well, look, just try. See how it goes. Do what you can, one at a time.
Why do you want me to do this so much?
Because staying home in bed all day won't make you happy. You need to get out and meet people, begin some meaningful relationships. Maybe if you put yourself out there, doing things you enjoy.
Back at Harvard, Carrie sits with other students around a large table as a slender man with scruffy facial hair peers over her shoulder.
Franny and Zoe, one of my favorites.
You've got good taste.
He sets down his bag.
Well, welcome to English 303, the modernists. I'm Professor Harrison, and you are a bunch of kids who think you already know everything but haven't even got a clue what life is really like beyond the ivy walls. It's a banal, nauseating carousel of responsibility and disappointments one after another. But my sweater is soft, and the rain streaking down the windows kind of lovely, so I guess I won't off myself just yet.
He smiles.
Modernists, especially Joyce and Wolfe, are very big on stream of consciousness techniques in their novels, and you just got your first lesson in it. Would anyone like to give it a try? Say whatever pops into your mind.
His piercing blue eyes focus on Carrie.
Franny and Zoe, how about you?
Oh, I wouldn't know what to say.
It's not difficult. You just start with your name, where you're from, kind of go from there.
She looks around at the other students.
My name's Carrie Pilby. I was born in London, but I moved to New York when I was 12, just after my mom died. I guess I shouldn't have said that, because now everyone's feeling weird about the girl whose mom died, like I'm Antigone or Harry Potter or Bambi or something, but I'm not a Greek tragedy or a wizard. If I was a character in a movie, I'd like to be Katharine Hepburn, preferably in a movie where she gives Spencer Tracy a run for his money. But I can tell I'm boring you now, and this is hard. Harder than skipping fourth and eighth grade. But not as hard as skipping second grade, because going from pencil to pen was pretty abrupt.
Excellent. If you want to use pencil in my class, you're more than welcome. Now, anyone else want to give it a shot?
Professor Harrison motions to someone else, then gazes back at Carrie's cherubic face.
Carrie?
Back in the present.
Carrie, I really believe that if you do the things on this list, you're going to feel a lot better about life.
I bet I won't.
So prove it. Prove to me that I don't know how to do my job.
You're a very odd man.
Thank you. That's the nicest compliment I've had all day.
He toasts her with his coffee mug. Later, Carrie walks down a damp street, swinging her umbrella, then trots down the front steps of a pet store. She approaches the curly-haired man behind the counter.
Hi. Davey, I would like a goldfish, please.
We're having a two-for-one special.
I just want one.
But the other one is free. They're social creatures.
You heard me say I want a fish, right? Not a chimpanzee.
Fish swim in schools. They like company.
She closes her eyes.
Fish swim in schools because evolutionarily it gives them better chance of surviving. My fish is going to be living in a one-bedroom apartment, not the Great Barrier Reef.
Davy lowers his cleft chin.
Fine, just give me two fish.
Great.
Carrie marches out of the pet store carrying a plastic bag containing her goldfish. She holds up an instant camera and takes a shot of her new pets, then grabs the photo with her teeth as the camera ejects it. In her apartment, she stares at the fish.
Katharine, your job is to prove Petrov wrong. Spencer, your job is to keep Katharine happy.
She turns toward the sound, her eyes narrowing, then goes to the window. Opening it, she finds the didgeridoo player sitting on her shared fire escape.
Hey! Get away from there before I call the police!
Why?
One, because you're clearly smoking something illegal, and two, because it looks like you're about to burgle that apartment.
Why would I want to burgle my own apartment?
You don't live there.
Well, then I definitely need to stop paying rent.
You know, some other guy lives there.
Yeah, my roommate, Ted.
Okay, well, if it's your apartment, why do you play your didgeridoo in the street like a crazy hippie?
Because Ted doesn't like me practicing in the apartment.
I can't say I blame him.
He wiggles his didgeridoo bong.
You want to play it? Might help you relax.
What makes you think I'm not relaxed?
Well, people's shoulders aren't naturally aligned with their earlobes like that.
Maybe I'm cold. Maybe you shouldn't make assumptions about people you don't know.
I was just razzing, but I didn't mean anything by it.
Carrie looks angrily around her kitchen, then plods to the refrigerator. She takes out a bottle of cherry soda and puts it in her purse along with her cell phone, then turns toward the goldfish tank.
I am going to work. If anyone calls, take a message.
In the law office break room, Carrie takes a sip of her cherry soda. Her eyes widen, her eyebrows lift, and the corners of her mouth raise up. Douglas stares at her.
Dad, you're just having orgasm over a cherry soda.
Can you just leave me to drink my soda in peace?
Oh, of course. I'll let you two have some privacy.
He grins knowingly and slips away. Carrie pulls the boxy instant camera from her bag and aims it at the bottle of cherry soda on the table in front of her. Tara comes in.
So what's your deal? Are you a student?
No, I graduated last year.
From where?
Boston.
Boston University?
No, it was in Cambridge, actually.
Emerson, Brandeis, Northeastern.
Harvard.
So why don't you just say Harvard?
Because when I say Harvard, people always reply with something asinine like, say something smart.
Douglas returns.
Hey, did you know Carrie went to Harvard?
No way. Say something smart.
Carrie throws a hand up.
No, no. Seriously.
Tara tilts her strawberry blonde-haired head.
I think the influence of Kierkegaard on Camus is underestimated. I believe Hobbes is just Rousseau in a dark mirror, and I truly believe with Hegel that transcendence is absorption.
Cool.
I have no idea what you just said, but you sure sound like a friggin' genius.
Yeah, I stole that from Infinite Jest by David Foster Wallace.
Oh, come on. Smart and pretty? You must be killing it out there. You have a boyfriend?
Is that really your next question?
Okay, so what kind of guy are you looking for?
I'm not looking for any kind of guy.
So you go for girls?
No, I'm not a lesbian.
Are you a nun?
Good one.
In a flashback, Carrie sits with Professor Harrison in a restaurant.
I can't believe you've never had Moroccan.
No, I've always wanted to try it. And thanks for inviting me.
Well, I couldn't have you on Thanksgiving now, could I?
Oh, so you don't take all your students to dinner?
Only my best and brightest. Sparkling water for the lady and a glass of Barolo for me, please. Thank you. You know, I skipped a grade of school growing up, too. Yeah, it was so frustrating knowing that I was smarter than most of the adults I knew, and yet they still treated me like a child. I hated, absolutely hated being treated like a child.
Yeah, I really hate that, too. Although, I technically was a child until fairly recently.
Yeah, but you're gonna know it, so... I'm kind of young at heart, so I guess we meet in the middle.
Yeah.
Thank you.
The waiter sets down their drinks.
Well, cheers.
Cheers.
He sips his wine while she takes a drink of water.
Oh, that's just masterful. Really, really delicious. How's your water?
It's pedestrian, with a frothy finish.
Would you like to taste my wine?
She lifts his glass.
Okay, whoa. Okay. First, breathe in the bouquet.
She sniffs the wine.
All right, now take a sip. Let the wine coat your tongue.
Carrie takes a sip, then makes a pained face.
Really?
It looks good on you.
What?
The wine. It's on your lips, right?
She touches her mouth. In the present, Carrie waits outside her therapist's.
It's in every single sexual fantasy I have.
She puts an ear to the door.
Great, and then right before the main event, the phone rings.
You answer it?
No, but it still totally ruins the moment.
So, things get hot and heavy, but just before intercourse, the phone rings.
And then my penis becomes the size of a nut, practically disappears. I'm like a Ken doll.
She accidentally pushes the door open.
Sorry, I thought I was late.
I'm sorry, George. It is time, in fact. Let's come back to this next week, shall we?
Oh, we have a couple more minutes remaining, but we can tack that on to next week.
Absolutely. Thank you, George.
Okay. Thank you, Doc.
Carrie turns to George.
Call me.
Carrie.
Petrov closes the door.
Carrie, that was awful. And I'd appreciate you not listening in on my sessions.
Sorry, the door was just flat enough for my ear. Anyway, I was very eager to get here because I have your precious list, and I'll have you know, I've already ticked two things off.
Really?
Don't act so surprised. I'm a very good student, you know.
All right, well, let's hear it then.
He looks at the paper.
Firstly, I'll admit the cherry soda was excellent.
She drops photos.
Very good.
The jury's still out on the goldfish. They don't do much.
Well, when it comes to goldfish, I'd lower my expectations. Good start. Maybe if we can focus on some of these other things. Carrie,
She rolls her eyes and drops her head back.
What's so great about being happy anyway? You know, there are some brilliant unhappy people. Kierkegaard, Beethoven, Van Gogh, Morrissey. Anyway, I'm not unhappy.
You'd be a lot more convincing if you could look at me when you say that.
She forces herself to gaze at him awkwardly.
One of these days, you should decide you're going to let someone get to know you. You can start by trusting me.
Carrie blinks at him.
Don't you think that real companionship would help? What about going on a date? Any more thoughts about that?
Why does everyone act like sex is this magical happiness cure-all?
I didn't say anything about sex.
Well, then you're the only one, because it seems to be the only thing anyone talks about.
Who's anyone?
Well, people at work, people I overhear in cafes, that weird little perp who was in here just now talking about his disappearing penis.
Please, leave him out of this.
I mean, why can't I go into a grocery store without being accosted by headlines claiming 101 ways to have an orgasm? I mean, you know, wouldn't 53 ways be sufficient? Wouldn't one?
Well, it's true that sex is a big part of adult life. If it weren't, the human population would die out. But it doesn't mean that everyone is sex-obsessed. It may seem like that to you now, but I would gather that if you were older and had more experience, it wouldn't seem as glaring.
What makes you think that I'm not sexually experienced?
Are you?
I can have opinions regardless of whether I myself have had sex.
True. But it's hard to comment on what it's like to fly in an airplane if you've never been off the ground.
She gazes downward.
However, if you have had sexual experiences and you want to discuss them...
No, thanks. Ew. Anyway, you can't just go on a date. You have to be asked.
Not necessarily.
I refuse to troll the internet for a date.
I don't know. You just might end up having the most fun you've ever had.
Or I'll end up locked in a crate and shipped overseas to be a Saudi prince's sex slave.
My guess is it'll probably end up being somewhere in between the two.
In her apartment, Carrie inspects the personal ads page of a paper called Village Rag.
Single male seeks adventurous woman into hiking, blah, blah. Single male, 76. No. Single white male, engaged and confused. Due to be married, but want to test the waters first.
She circles it.
That has to be the most inappropriate ad ever posted. All right.
She turns from her phone to the fish.
I do not need to be judged by you right now, Catherine. Petrov said, go on a date. He didn't say it couldn't be to rat out a cheat. Oh, I could find out the name of his fiance and warn her. Huh? Kill two birds with one stone. Cross off the list and catch a hypocrite in the act.
She puts her cell to her ear.
Shh. It's ringing.
The fish look her way.
Hello, this is Matt. Please leave a message.
Carrie stands up.
Hi, Matt. You sound really, really cute. I sympathize fully with your situation. I'm dating this great guy, but there's just no chemistry, and I want to see if I'm right. When I saw your ad, I thought, well, this could be a discreet way to find out, like you said. My name is...
She glances at a bookshelf.
Gloria Patch. Gloria Patch.
She mouths what?
The last name's even allowed. Maybe that wasn't so discreet. So yeah, just Gloria. Call me and we'll go on a date. Bye. Oh, okay, that went well. Thanks for the support.
She gestures to the fish.
What do you mean I didn't leave my number? Damn it.
She shuffles around the table back to her phone and picks it up.
Hello?
Is that Gloria?
Who? Oh, yes. Yes, it is.
This is Matt. You just called me?
So I did. But I didn't leave my number.
Oh, it came up on my phone.
Oh, cool.
You sound really Great.
Thanks.
So, would you like to meet somewhere or something?
Sure. How about 12:30 at Anejo on 28th? It's very nice, very atmospheric, and very public.
Well, I don't want too public.
No. No, of course. Well, it's not so public that you'd be outed, but public enough that you wouldn't be able to kill me without witnesses.
Okay. Okay, well, that sounds good.
Okay. Great. Bye.
Later, she paused through her closet.
What does one wear to expose a cheater? Not that.
She opens her front door.
Jesus! Scared the crap out of me! How long have you been standing there?
No time at all, I was just about to knock. Look, I just wanted to apologize about what I said the other day about you not being relaxed. You're right. I don't know you, and I shouldn't have judged. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, apology accepted, I guess. Carrie.
I thought maybe I could invite you to dinner or something.
What for?
I don't know. I thought it might be fun.
Fun?
Yeah, fun. You've heard of the concept.
I'm familiar with it. Yeah. One of the things that people do, and they indulge in it to divert themselves from the true realities of existence.
Well, look, if you ever feel like leaving your apartment, just...
What the hell is that supposed to mean?
Nothing, just... You have a reputation around here for being a bit of a hermit.
Is that right? Well, if you don't mind, I'm actually just going now to meet someone. A male someone. See how I'm leaving the apartment?
I see it, yeah.
You might want to spread the word.
Oh, I'll definitely do that.
Good.
And Carrie.
She looks back at Sai.
Got some lipstick on your teeth.
She turns away and rubs a finger on her teeth to check.
I hate it when that happens.
At the restaurant, Carrie steps up to the hostess.
Hey, party of one?
No, actually, two. I'm meeting someone.
Really? Like, a man?
Yeah, a man.
Okay, cool. Just look around and see if he's here.
Well, I haven't actually met him before.
Let's see.
But I know his name. It's Matt. Matt.
Yeah, I think I know who he is.
The hostess motions to a clean-cut man in a tie.
Good.
He rises, knocking into his table.
Okay.
Matt retrieves a menu from the floor and Carrie picks up a knife from under the table.
Hi.
She takes off her coat.
Hi.
Carrie sits.
You're just,
Matt scratches his head right below his crew-cut hair.
You're much more beautiful than I had expected.
Am I?
Yeah, I thought I would only get desperate ogresses replying to an ad in the Village Rag, let alone a woman who's into literature.
How'd you know I'm into literature?
Gloria Patch from Fitzgerald's underrated masterpiece, The Beautiful Unbanned.
Carrie lifts an eyebrow and Matt nods.
Okay. I'm a massive geek, sorry.
Oh, don't be sorry. No, you won't beat me for geekdom.
I'll take that challenge.
You're on.
Okay. Should we order some drinks?
I'll just stick to water, not to be a spoilsport.
No. Actually, I don't drink either. I never saw the point of it.
Oh, well, in my case, it would be illegal.
Really? How old are you?
19.
His jaw drops.
Wow. So you're a student?
X. I graduated Harvard last year.
No way. I went to MIT.
Did you?
Mathematics.
She blinks.
Hang on, so you must have been 18 when you graduated?
That math degree came in handy, huh?
Well, that was a little thing called subtraction.
Are you guys excited?
They look at each other.
I'll just a quesadilla with water.
And I'll have a Diet Coke and the cheese enchiladas.
Great. I'll take your menus. Coming up.
Matt shrugs.
A Diet Coke?
Yeah, I'm just trying to keep the weight off before the...
He tilts his head uncomfortably.
Yeah, so I'm surprised that
someone from Harvard reads the personals.
How else should I find a man? Wait for our eyes to meet while trying to solve Fermat's theorem?
Well, Fermat's was already solved in 1994.
Oh, well, 1-0 to you. Asshat.
Shit for brains.
Matt glances at the family's table.
I just used to get called Dork.
He actually had a kid whose last name was Dork. But it didn't really hurt him, though. He was way too good-looking.
Luckily, he didn't have a first name like Dick.
It was Dick, his first name.
Dick Dork was a person's name that you knew.
Dick Dork.
Well, I'm going to have to come to your apartment and look at your yearbooks to make sure you're not lying to me.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Later, the restaurant has emptied out.
Was it just me, or did you find everyone in high school stultifying?
Yes. In fact, if you used that word, stultifying, in front of them, they would have shouted, SAT word.
SAT word.
Yes.
I remember that.
Yeah. Oh, and the teachers were lousy, too. Yeah. Well, actually, two of them are coming to my wedding.
His smile fades and Carrie knits her brow.
What are you doing?
Oh, nothing. I was just playing with my dad.
No. What are you doing here? I mean, what's with the ad?
Oh, my fiance and I got together when we were really young, and I love her, I do, but I...
He presses a fist into his lips.
I just sometimes think something's missing, and I don't want to do the wrong thing, so I'm just looking for clarity. Does that make any sense, or do I just sound like a total dick?
The two aren't necessarily mutually exclusive. When's the big day?
February 4th.
Oh, excuse me.
She snags a drink from the waitress.
Hey. Joking.
Carrie gulps the half-finished margarita.
I thought you didn't drink.
And I thought you'd be a creep.
Would that have helped?
Frankly, yes. I came here with the intention of exposing you.
What do you mean?
I read your ad, and as a member of the female gender and people with integrity everywhere, it pissed me off. So I thought I'd make a date with you, find out about your girlfriend, and then tell her she's about to marry a cheat.
Oh, my God.
What do you expect? You're getting married in 2 months. You're trying to meet girls in classified ads. I thought I'd find a narcissistic rat bag, not some handsome, charming, smart...
She shuts her eyes.
You need to be honest with her.
I know. You're right. And I just want to be clear about how I'm feeling before I do that.
Are you clearer now?
He gazes at Carrie, his shoulders dropping.
No.
Carrie takes another swig of the stolen margarita.
Mm. Well, I'm glad to have helped. Good luck with the nuptials, I guess.
She shrugs on her coat.
Or not.
Later in the law office, Carrie and Tara sit by piles of paperwork.
You liked him, didn't you?
Whether I did or not is irrelevant. He's engaged, and that is that.
You should definitely see him again.
What is it about the word engaged that you don't get?
He's not even married yet. What's the problem? Even if he were married, who cares?
I care. I try very hard not to engage in activities that are harmful to myself or others.
Okay, you don't think it's gonna hurt you to not get to hang out with someone you like? You don't think it hurts to deny yourself the possibility of love?
Carrie squints.
Okay, next time you see Matt, ask him his fiance's middle name.
There won't be a next time. Why?
Because guys don't usually pay attention to details like that. But if they're in love, they do.
They've been together forever. Of course he's gonna know a middle name.
So it's a good test then, isn't it? And if he doesn't know it, I say it's fair game.
Yow, yow, yow. What's up? What are you guys, what are you talking about?
Oh, you know, clothes, makeup, boys.
Sorry I missed that. So, are you going to see the legend tomorrow night?
Who? My recently ex-boyfriend is playing a gig at Natto's.
Why is he your ex?
Because he chose to go off with some whore. That's why. And she is so not his type.
Yeah, he much prefers sluts to whores.
Tara smiles icily at Douglas.
What's his name?
His name is Dex, and he's a jerk. But he's amazing. Like, his tongue should be registered as a national treasure. Hey, you should come.
You should totally go.
Carrie sets down her cherry soda.
Sure, why not?
Hey, that's my philosophy, too.
Tara leaves.
Thank you so much for going. I cannot watch another Dex show. Never really felt bad
about it. Snow falls on a bundled-up crowd lined up outside a graffiti-covered club. Inside, Carrie and Tara sit at the bar.
Vodka, straight up. Oh, actually, what's the one all the sorority girls drink? The one that makes you really drunk? Oh, rum. Rum, double.
ID?
Can I give you my IQ instead? It's 185. Surely I can be better trusted with alcohol than older, less intelligent people.
Are you 21?
The bartender squints.
Alcohol is an organic compound in which the hydroxyl group is bound to a carbon atom so that the chemical makeup of the ethanol in your slightly toxic word is C2H5OH. I think I can handle it.
Hey, just lie.
I'm not a liar. Please, I can give you a drink unless you do.
Well, you know what? Morality is inconvenient.
Coke, please. Regular, not that diet shit.
He steps away.
Okay, you're feisty tonight. I like it. But at least I mean, like...
Tara flops Carrie's hair.
Why can't people just like me for who I am? Nobody likes anybody for who they are. That's why we have to pretend to be better than who we are and then let people find out the truth later, you know, once they've already invested.
It makes you sound like a psychopath.
Okay, no.
She sips.
It's spiked.
Wow, looks like she is a genius.
Finally, the recognition I've been craving.
Maybe that was a move.
I don't get why people are so sex obsessed. It's like a national epidemic.
Because sex is freaking fantastic.
It's not that great. Kissing pop, maybe, but the main event is nothing to be obsessed about.
Yes, I win. I knew you weren't a virgin.
What do you mean you win? Win what?
Just a bet with Dougie.
About my virginity?
About your virginity, okay? Commit some money, be happy for me.
Later.
Your problem is you haven't had sex with the right person. There's a lot of good, clean sex going on out there. By clean, I mean dirty, okay? And just because people like to do it doesn't mean that they're obsessed. Do you think people are sleep obsessed because they like to sleep every day?
You have to sleep for survival. Some people screw for survival. Sleep obsession doesn't hurt anyone.
Neither does sex if it's between two consenting adults. Okay, the Victorians force people to deny their natural desires.
Shouldn't our natural desires sometimes be denied? Like, what if your natural desire is to step on a baby?
Okay, yeah, you have a point. Like, stepping on babies should be avoided at all costs.
I just think the people who make an awful lot of excuses to indulge in bad behavior on the pretext that I wanted to do it, or if we're discreet, it won't hurt anyone. Humans are hypocrites, and that's what makes us so bloody interesting.
More drinks arrive.
What language was that?
That's how you speak. That's how you come off. You should know that about yourself.
Tara picks up the yellow notepad sheet.
Oh my God. What is this? Is this a bucket list? You weren't dying, are you? Because I do not have the emotional maturity to deal with a terminal friend right now.
It's not a bucket list.
Then what is it?
Carrie glances around.
I see a therapist. He made it for me to help me be happier.
Oh, honey, you don't need a list for that. I'll help you. Okay, I'm having a New Year's Eve party for one thing. You should definitely come. Also, you should call up that bad boy from the paper and give him the bang of his life. He'll leave that twit he's with and he'll never be lonely again.
Do you seriously think that?
It's not your job to be everyone's moral guardian. If you like the guy, that's between you and him. He's the one with the fiance. That's for him to deal with, not you.
Tara adjusts her breast.
Ooh, there he is. Okay. Do they say, like, get off the stage and do me?
Yes, but not in a good way.
How can it not be in a good way?
Dex and his band set up.
Dex, I love you, you asshole!
Tara walks toward the music.
Go. I know he's so good, right?
I'll put my foot down and I'll stomp on the pavement.
excitement. I'm a wire through a plaster wall.
Carrie pushes her way through the club's graffiti-covered door and into the snowy night. She gazes up at the falling flakes, then puts on her floppy white beanie. She lifts an arm to flag down a taxi and slides on a pair of gloves as the cab pulls to the curb beside her. Inside the cab, she gazes out at the glistening lights of the city rolling past her side window. She smiles slightly to herself as the cab bounces along the avenue. Then her pale blue eyes turn upward toward the dark sky and drifting snow. In a flashback, she looks out a window pane with the same expression, peering upward as snow falls outside a book-lined study.
What are you thinking about?
How, even if I started now and dedicated my life to reading, I wouldn't get through a fraction of all the books ever written.
You fascinate me, Gary Pilby, you know that?
Harrison brings over two glasses of wine.
I find you completely and utterly enchanting.
She takes one.
Why, thank you, Professor, from a 1950s black and white movie.
He touches her jawline with the tips of his fingers.
And so?
You know, when I say things like that, you're brilliant, or I think you're beautiful. It's because I really mean that. I'm not trying to flatter you.
What's your favorite version of Faust?
Don't change the subject.
No?
No.
He steps in closer. Harrison leans his head forward and gently presses his lips against hers. Carrie returns the kiss, then draws back slightly, glancing up into his eyes.
What is this? I've never heard it before.
He grins affectionately.
You have an insatiable appetite for learning.
He shakes his head, his long bangs swaying.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
Don't be.
He leans down and they kiss again. In the present, Carrie stares wistfully into the darkness, her taxi rolling past a long row of townhouses. Her eyes fix on something outside and she furrows her brow. She sees Dr. Petrov putting on gloves outside a white townhouse. A blonde woman steps from the building and they kiss. The therapist rubs the woman's shoulders, says something to her, then trots off down the building's front steps. Carrie watches him go, then climbs out of the cab.
Stay here, 1 minute.
She hops up the stairs of the white townhouse. At the top, she peers at the names written on the building's intercom. Mr. and Mrs. Jeffrey Rubin. At her apartment, she searches for Jeffrey Rubin online and finds a photo of a distinguished gray-haired man beside the blonde woman. She puts her cell phone to her ear.
Dad, he's cheating. You know your friend you hired to try and fix me? Well, he's doing it with a married woman.
Hello, Carrie. Your father just stepped away for a moment.
Sorry. Who's this? I thought I called my dad.
No, you did.
Then who are you?
Oh, dear.
You probably should not have picked up the phone. This wasn't how I wanted us to meet.
But I did
want to let you know how excited I am that you will be joining us here for Christmas.
The kids are practically wild with anticipation.
But kids? What?
Oh, Daniel, please tell me you have told her about us. Well, we were.
The woman hands the phone to Daniel.
Hello, darling.
What's the matter?
Tell me what haven't you told me that this woman and her children know that I don't?
Apart from that you're not coming to New York for Christmas.
Well, it was meant to be a surprise, darling. I got the ticket so that you could come here.
To London? But that's a shit surprise. You know I hate London. We'd always have Christmas here in New York.
You know, darling, life doesn't always work out as we plan it. We have to adapt.
But why? And when were you going to tell me? And when are you ever going to stop lying?
I thought it was too long a conversation to have on the phone. And so I decided I'll wait till you come.
When exactly is the perfect time to tell me that you're abandoning our Christmas tradition because of some woman you're
shagging and her kids are obviously more important?
Now, Carrie, that is not the way it is. Matter of fact, Fliss and I are going to be married.
Carrie squeezes her eyes shut.
I'm sorry. It sounded like you just said you're getting married.
I did. I am. We are.
So, when you come over, we can have a long lunch and talk everything through, and I'll explain all to you. You can get to meet Fliss.
Carrie shakes her head.
I don't want to meet Fliss.
Darling, we can sort this out.
Go sort yourself.
She hangs up and drops the hand holding the phone to her side. Then she glances around her living room. She slams her phone on the mantle. She presses the sleeve of her oversized shirt up to her nose. Her landline flies out her kitchen window. Now Carrie strides up to an industrial-looking apartment building, checking the address on her phone. Matt opens his apartment door.
I can't believe you called.
Neither can I.
I'm glad you did.
He takes her bag and coat.
Thank you.
She follows him farther into the stylish apartment.
It's a nice place.
Thanks. Can I get you something to...
Where is she?
She's at a meeting in Westchester with some guy at Kraft. She opened her own advertising firm, and he is a friend of her dad's, so she thinks he might throw her a bone.
Is that a euphemism?
What? Oh, God, no.
What if he did throw her a bone? Would you be upset?
Maybe. I'm not sure.
Carrie moves in closer and kisses him. They draw apart and she stares up into his eyes.
So are we doing this then?
You do seem to be, yeah.
He angles his head and leans in for another, more intense kiss. They separate and Carrie searches his eyes, then grins and turns away giddily. She walks away, running a hand along his dining table, then clasps her fingers behind her back and steps near a floor-to-ceiling built-in bookcase.
It's a great bookcase.
Yep. Where we keep all the books.
He dives in for another kiss, tilting his head from one side to the other as their lips press together. Her shoulders rise up as their mouths passionately intertwine.
Oh, where do you learn how to kiss like that?
Harvard.
Damn. I don't think MIT had that course.
You're doing okay.
Okay.
Their lips meet again. Carrie helps Matt peel off his dark jacket. Then he struggles with the buttons of her white shirt.
Is this your first time unbuttoning a girl's shirt?
No, but it's my first time unbuttoning a man's shirt from this angle.
I'm actually wearing a guy's shirt?
I believe so, yeah.
How can you tell?
Buttons. Buttons on the left for a woman, buttons on the right for men. Look.
He moves behind her.
What's this?
My God, how did I not know this?
See? You can't see, but I have my eyes closed for a
He unbuttons her shirt and pulls it off. Then she turns to face him and they kiss again, her arms draped around his shoulders. He lifts her up so she straddles his hips and carries her to a couch. Carrie rolls off his lap to sit alongside him as they kiss, his hands caressing the sides of her head as they embrace. She glances over his shoulder and notices a framed photo of Matt with his fiancée.
What's the matter?
Is that her?
Yes, it is.
She's watching us.
No, she isn't. It's just a photo.
A sticky note stuck to the picture reads, "This is to remind you to call about the cable thing. I love you too." Two is spelled T-O.
Wait, stop. She spelled two wrong.
He looks at the note. Matt turns the frame face down.
She's a terrible speller. Why don't we just close our eyes and just try to relax, okay?
He leans in again.
I feel dizzy.
She turns away from him and stares off.
I knew we shouldn't try to do this at my place. All the photos and stuff are a real mood killer.
He rubs her back.
You know what else is a mood killer? Having a fiancé.
She jumps to her feet and grabs her shirt.
How are you going to say vows, sacred vows, in front of everyone you know that you will honor and love and cherish this woman, forsaking all others, when you clearly don't respect her, which is the foundation of all of those things?
She buttons her shirt.
You're not going to leave her, are you?
I really like you. I really think that we could be good together. You deserve to be stimulated by someone who's on equal footing with you, and so do I.
Then end this facade of an engagement.
I will. I mean, you know, I might. I just met you.
Not for me, for you, for her.
Look, I thought that you wanted this.
Just because you want something doesn't make it right.
Oh, Jesus, Pollyanna, this is real life. Real life is complicated. Don't be such a child.
She glares at him, then storms out. In a flashback, Carrie and Harrison cuddle in bed.
I think this has been my best semester ever, Carrie.
Me too.
She leans on his bare chest.
Oh, I forgot I have something for you.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. It's more of a loan than a gift.
Carrie reaches into her bag and pulls out a copy of Franny and Zoe.
I thought you might like to read the first edition version. But I need it back because it's really special to me.
He nods.
Oh, sweet. Thank you. I promise I will take good care of it. You make me happy, you know that?
You make me happy too.
He clasps her hand.
You know what would really, really make me happy?
What's that?
If you could say this one thing for me.
What thing?
He pushes her hair aside and leans close to whisper in her ear. Her mouth drops open and her eyes widen.
I can't say that.
Why not? Such a quick learner. It's just one little thing. You don't have to say it once. You can start slow.
It won't sound right. It won't sound like me.
Sure. Just say it.
Harrison kisses her neck and her eyes flit away uncomfortably.
What do you want?
He leans in toward her ear again.
I can't. It's too embarrassing.
The professor looks in Carrie's eyes, then rolls away from her on the bed.
Are you serious?
Why can't you just do what I ask?
Because I don't want to, and frankly, I find it a bit demeaning.
It's not demeaning. It's fun.
Not for me, it isn't.
You know what? I tried. But if you can't just do this one thing for me, then...
Then what? Jesus, David, why are you acting like such a psycho about this?
Don't be such a child, Carrie. I'll call you cab.
He climbs off the mattress, leaving her alone. Back outside of Matt's apartment building, Carrie pulls out her cell. It's Matt calling. She slams the phone to the sidewalk. At her apartment, she trudges in and drops her bag, then peers down into the fish tank where it sits on the table across from a window wide open to the night air. She turns to stare at the open window, her eyes wide, then looks back at the goldfish. She drops to her knees.
Oh, Catherine! Oh, I'm sorry.
One of the fish floats lifelessly. Carrie reaches her arms around the tank and hugs it close. At the pet store, she stands across from Davy holding a water-filled jar containing the one remaining fish.
I don't understand.
I need you to take him back.
We can't accept returns.
He's all alone. I can't do that to him. And you're the one that told me that fish were social. I already killed his friend. I don't want to kill him, too.
You killed who?
Catherine. It was an accident.
Did you eat her?
What? No. What?
Lots of people eat goldfish. On dares.
That is insane. Please, take him back. But don't let anyone eat him.
I told you, no refunds or returns.
I don't want my money back. Just have a heart. It's Christmas Eve.
Oh. Store policy.
Carrie dashes to the back and opens a tank full of goldfish.
Hey, what are you doing?
She dumps in her fish.
Be free. Make friends. Have a life.
You can't do that. Take him back.
I don't know which one is which.
I'm calling my manager.
Davy storms off and Carrie leans close to the glass of the fish tank.
Merry Christmas, Spencer.
The streets of Manhattan glisten and sparkle with colorful Christmas decorations. Carrie sits alone on her couch, balancing a wide circle of books on her coffee table like bricks to form the wide base of a Christmas tree-shaped tower. She glances outside to see into a window across the street, where a couple kisses near their Christmas tree. Carrie rises to her feet and gazes upward.
Ah!
She crosses to her living room window and opens it. She climbs up on a chair beside the window.
Ah!
Her brow furrows as she gazes outside. She spins toward the knocking sound, then walks into her dark kitchen. Sai squats on the fire escape.
Is everything okay?
What?
I heard screaming.
Oh, no, that was the television.
Oh, okay.
He nods, clutching his didgeridoo.
Has your roommate put you outside again?
Yeah, but if you don't want me to, I can...
Oh, no, that's fine. You go ahead. I'll be here. Obviously.
Hey.
He waves her over. She slides the window open.
Do you want to go for a walk? I mean, it is Christmas Eve. Normal people don't like to spend it alone.
How would you know what normal people do?
That's just what I'm told.
Don't you have to practice blowing indeterminate sounds out of a large piece of wood?
He smiles to himself.
I could do the break.
Now outside, they cross a street.
So, do you live alone?
I do.
Our lucky girl. My roommate Ted is insane.
Really?
I mean, he barely says a word. And when he does speak, it's invariably to lie. It's actually incredible. I've never met anyone like him.
She flashes a smile.
How long have you lived there?
A few months. I was roughing it living in a basement down in South Jersey for a while, just waiting until I got a job so I could move to the city. I didn't want to come here and be owing money to friends or having to live with four annoying roommates, you know?
Now you just have one annoying roommate?
That's a victory from where I'm standing.
And you actually have a job playing the didgeridoo? There can't be too many of them going around.
Well, I don't just play the didgeridoo.
Oh, what else do you play?
Just some other instruments.
Like what?
You really want to know?
Otherwise I wouldn't be asking.
Okay, let's see. Flute, clarinet, trumpet, trombone, tuba, saxophone, guitar, piano, drums, bassoon, harmonica, and the triangle. I'm actually pretty killer on the triangle.
And the didgeridoo.
Well, I'm still learning that one, but yeah.
Did you study music in college?
Yeah, at Berkeley.
They walk past bright storefronts, Carrie's arms crossed tightly in front of her body.
Do you like music?
Be a weird person if I didn't like music.
They both look down.
I used to listen to old records at my grandmother's when I was a kid. It was actually quite odd when I was younger, you know?
Impossible.
They glance across the busy street.
Who's your favorite musician?
John Coltrane at the moment.
Mike?
You heard of him?
He's kind of famous.
You'd be surprised by how many people have known so much.
Knowledge is kind of my thing.
Oh, yeah? Were you one of those head-down academic types in high school?
You could say that, yeah.
And I bet you're in every after-school society.
Not everyone. Just Harvard Model Congress, excellent exegetes, mathletes, college ball.
Wow, you really were a nerd.
Well, it's something coming from a band geek.
Touché.
He grins warmly at her as they stroll down the sidewalk.
What's your actual job?
I play clarinet for the New York Philharmonic. But I mean, I just started, so it's...
That's incredible. Your parents must be so proud of you.
You'd have thought they would be. But truth is, they really don't get it at all. My dad wanted me to do something more practical, I guess. Ever since I tried to explain to him that music's my thing, he pretty much refuses to engage in any discussion about it.
That's awful. How'd you deal with that?
I don't know. I didn't for a long time, and then one day I just thought, screw this, you know? I have one life, and I'm allowed to be happy, you know? He'll come around if he comes around.
Yeah.
They lock eyes briefly.
My dad has a whole new family. I just hate the feeling that I disappointed him.
Cy blinks and gazes off.
Has he disappointed you?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean you don't love him, does it?
No, of course not.
So maybe it's the same for him. I mean, I'm sure he loves you, but what's not to love?
She brushes her hair back behind her ear self-consciously.
So, what about you? What do you do?
Oh, I'm proofreader. Professional, though, not one of those amateurs you hear about.
I'm sure.
No, I'm not like you. I don't have it figured out yet.
Well, when you do, I got a feeling you're going to set the world alight.
What makes you say that?
That's just what my gut says.
They near a hot dog vendor, music blaring from his stainless steel cart.
Do you want to dance?
No. I dance like a rhythmless four-year-old.
He holds out his hands, smiling.
No, seriously. You'll have images you won't ever be able to get out of your head. Like when you see a really bad horror movie.
I love horror movies.
Seriously, no.
I won't take no for an answer.
Here, come on.
Okay, you asked for it.
All right.
He guides her hand to his shoulder.
Sure. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
They rock back and forth to the music, slowly turning in a circle. Behind them, the Empire State Building glows red and green.
You're freezing.
Oh, no, it's okay.
Here, feel my coat.
Thanks.
He wraps the coat around her.
That's good.
She reaches into the coat's pocket and pulls out a paperback.
Is this yours?
Yeah. Salinger. You ready? What am I saying? Of course you have.
Carrie stares intensely down at the book.
I have to go.
Go where?
There's just something I have to do really quickly. Would you mind if I borrow this? I'll bring it back tomorrow. You're really close by.
Of course. No problem.
Thank you. It's been really nice. You're not nearly as bad as I thought you were.
They share an affectionate look, and Cy watches her walk off. On a desolate street, Carrie trots up to a payphone. Cringing, she wipes the receiver with the long sleeves of Cy's coat. She holds the phone to her ear, her eyes darting about.
Merry Christmas.
She freezes.
Hello?
Is David there?
Who is this?
Carrie.
Who?
Can I just please speak to David?
Carrie?
I want my book back.
What book?
The one I lent you. My first edition of Franny and Zoe.
Yeah, I'm right in the middle of hosting a Christmas party. Can we discuss this next month when I get back to my office?
Can you please just do this one thing for me?
Well, I'll tell you what. If I find it, I'll be sure to let you know, okay? Merry Christmas, Carrie.
Back at her apartment, Carrie sits sullenly on the couch, the completed tree-shaped tower of books on the coffee table now covered with twinkling multicolored Christmas lights. She switches off the shimmering lights. A lone candle flickers before her. Her eyes turn up toward the ceiling.
Okay. God? I'm not gonna lie, I don't really believe you exist. So I don't really know what I'm doing or who I'm talking to, but anyway. I just thought I might at least let you know in the unlikely event that you did exist, what my requests would be this Christmas. It won't take long, I promise. So firstly, I'd like things to be better for the homeless, the old, the sick, and anyone who's not doing so great.
She looks to the side.
I'm sorry for when I judge people. And I'm sorry for the not so good things I've done lately. It just seems kind of hard to avoid doing them. But I'll try and do better, I promise. Oh, and this might sound really petty, but could you please help everyone learn how to pronounce In Excelsis Deo correctly? Thanks. And, I know that my mum probably, isn't up there with you. But if she was, I just want her to know that that I really, really, really miss her. And I know that my dad does too.
She nods.
As for him, I'm just tired of fighting. I just really wish everything could be like it was before. So anyway, that's it, I guess. Amen. Oh, and happy birthday.
She looks around the room, then shrugs her oversized cardigan sweater up higher on her shoulders and blows out the candle. Under overcast skies, Carrie hops up the front steps of her therapist's brownstone. She peers in through the glass, then the inner door opens and Petrov pushes his way outside.
I know it's Christmas, so you don't have to work, even though you're Jewish and technically you don't celebrate, but we need to talk.
Are you okay?
Not really. No. I'm sorry to interrupt your non-holiday, but I couldn't wait another week to tell you that your list is crap.
All right, just hold on.
No, I will not hold on. I need you to listen to me. Because of you, I am a fish murderer. Even worse, I almost slept with an engaged guy, and I am more confused than ever. Like, is it so wrong for me to do what is right and be happy? Because if so, I am destined to be a miserable person, list or no list.
Harry, stop. Please, come inside.
I know what you're going to say. You're going to say, I can't say the list is crap because I haven't finished it yet. But the thing is, I can't finish it because I left my Franny and Zoe at Professor Harrison's.
Okay, so get it back.
I told you, I can't. I don't need to finish the list to know that, shocker, drinking a cherry soda will not make my dad pay attention to me. Having a goldfish won't bring my mum back. It did help me learn, though, that going on a date could make me feel more lonely than ever. You know what I think? I think you're the one that needs to listen. It should have things on it like don't have affairs with married women.
Now, wait a minute.
And fine, you're an adult, so you can do what you like, but so can I. And just because I don't want to do demeaning or immoral things doesn't make me a prude. I mean, a prude wouldn't sleep with her English professor, would she?
You slept with your English professor.
Her father leans out the doorway.
Dad!
I tried to tell you.
What are you doing here? What is he doing here?
I was worried about you. Obviously, I had a very good reason to.
Why didn't you call?
I did call. You didn't pick up your phone.
Because my phones are broken! Where's your new family? Did you ship them off to? you so you didn't have to deal with them.
That's not fair, Carrie.
But what he did to me isn't fair. They didn't stop him. Go home, Dad.
I came so that you wouldn't have to go to London, which you seem to hate.
No, I don't hate London. I hate you. And I hate this stupid list.
Carrie tosses the list toward the two men and storms down the stairs.
That went well. Give her some time.
In Central Park, Carrie, wearing her floppy white beanie, strides across a stone bridge below the barren branches of trees. Brown leaves partly cover the grass just beyond a twisted wire mesh fence she strolls alongside. Her glove-clad hands bounce limply against the sides of her long gray plaid overcoat. She stops walking and turns to gaze to her left, condensation puffing from her mouth with each exhale. She steps toward a large bronze statue of a man with an open book in his lap and a young swan looking up at him. Her father sits near the foot of this statue, his weathered features cast downward. He turns, sees his daughter, and rises to his feet.
Wasn't sure if you'd remember. Been such a long time.
I'm a prodigy, aren't I? I think I can remember the simple phrase, if you get lost, I'll meet you at Hans Christian Andersen.
They sit down beside each other on the edge of the statue stone platform.
Poor guy. Never found love. Wrote all his books for children and never had any of his own.
Might be a good thing. If he had them, he undoubtedly would have disappointed them.
Daniel Pilby presses his lips together.
I really want you to like Felicity. I should have told you. But I thought that if you met her first, then she and her kids, you'd give them a bit more of a chance.
Carrie avoids his eyes.
When your mother got sick, I felt that I had failed her somehow. My whole reason for being was to take care of her and you. And then I got really terrified that I was going to fail you as well. So I thought that you would be better off with people who understood how to teach you. I mean, you were so far ahead of your classmates. You were brilliant. And I thought, if you went to college, you'd meet people who were of like mind.
I was 14. I was a freak.
What about the English teacher?
Made me feel like less of one. The beginning, at least.
His leather-gloved fingers fidget in his lap.
Did he hurt you?
No, it wasn't like that.
We can press charges.
Dad, I don't mean press charges for hurting someone's feelings.
That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the fact that you were underage.
I was 16. That's a legal age of consent. And anyway, he never forced me.
He manipulated you. He used his position.
Daniel gazes off into the distance.
I'm going to have him fired.
Well, he's teaching at Columbia now, so it looks like someone beat you to it. I just wish the bastard would give me my book back.
What book?
Franny and Zoe. Don't you remember? Mum gave me a first edition for my 12th birthday.
Oh, yeah.
He smiles sadly.
So she did. You lent him that book?
I thought he'd appreciate it. I thought he'd appreciate me.
The wrinkles on Daniel's forehead deepen.
Right. That's it. Come on. Let's go.
He stands up.
Where?
I'm going to get your book back.
What?
Where's he live?
Dad, I really don't think...
Carrie, where does he live?
Now, father and daughter step up to a wreath-covered door. A pretty brunette woman answers.
Hey. Hi. Is David here?
Who is it, Amanda?
There's a girl here to see you.
Professor Harrison forces a smile.
Carrie, what an unexpected pleasure. Oh, this is Amanda, my wife. Carrie Proby, a student.
Ex-student. You got married.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
I'm Daniel Bilby, Carrie's father.
It's nice to meet you.
We've come to get a book that your husband's been kind enough to look after for me.
Oh, yeah, the book. Well, it's somewhere inside the house. As soon as I have a chance, I'll find it and I'll put it in the mail.
Well, why don't we save you the trouble and have a quick look ourselves?
Daniel forces his way past them.
Excuse me.
Carrie follows.
I already told you I don't know where it is.
But you said yourself it must be here somewhere. Hello?
They pass people in the living room.
Do you mind?
No, not at all. We won't be a moment.
Daniel traipses through the kitchen and dining room.
Happy Christmas.
Same to you.
Library.
He and his daughter rush into a wood-paneled room.
We've got guests.
They seem very nice.
Oh.
Carrie dashes to another bookshelf and she scans it from bottom to top, then sees her book.
Huh. Ah. No, that wasn't so difficult after all.
Love you all.
Well, there is one small thing.
Yes.
He punches Harrison in the nose.
Borrowing a book and not returning it is the height of rudeness. Come along, Carrie.
Carrie turns to her ex-professor as she leaves.
Looks good on you.
What?
The blood. Turned your lips red.
Father and daughter leave the house. Outside, Daniel shakes his hand, then clutches his sore knuckles.
Oh, are you okay?
I think I've broken something. Bloody worth it, though, eh?
Let me see. I think you're gonna be okay.
He gazes lovingly at his daughter.
I missed you.
And I missed you, too. So, so much. And I'm so sorry for everything.
It's okay. But you need to stop trying to get me sorted. I'm 19. I'm not supposed to be sorted yet.
Back at Petrov's brownstone, Carrie opens the office door. The therapist reclines on his couch, holding his forehead.
I come in peace.
Carrie, hi. I wasn't sure if you'd show up for your appointment today. Did your dad leave?
Yeah, he did. I miss him already. You can go back to sleep if you want.
No. I was just a little tired.
Long night?
You do realize it's not appropriate for me to discuss my personal life with you.
I think it would really help me if you did.
Petrov leans back and runs a hand down his face.
All right. What do you want to know?
Was there ever a time when you thought that cheating was wrong?
Of course, I still do.
Then how do you justify it? Don't you feel bad?
Yes. No. All of the above. I do part-time consulting for Cheryl's agency. She works with abused children. We spent a lot of time together. I invited her for coffee. We talked. We talked more. We wanted to spend more time together. I suppose I am what you might call a hypocrite. It must bring you great joy to hear me say that.
No, it doesn't.
Her husband doesn't show her any affection.
That's an excuse.
He's always gone.
Excuse.
He's been cheating.
Excuse.
And maybe...
Excuse. Maybe she'll leave him.
He smiles tightly.
Excuse.
I just came to let you know that my dad and I made up.
I'm very glad.
And, okay. He helped me to get this back.
She hands Petrov the book.
Franny and Zoe. And as we often say in my profession, how did that make you feel?
Like, maybe I should finish that silly or not so silly list that I threw in your general direction.
Oh, I was hoping you'd save that.
You saved it?
Just in case.
I have a photographic memory, remember?
He passes the paper.
Thank you.
Carrie leans back in her chair.
So what are you going to do about Mrs. Rubin?
I don't know. Contrary to what the degrees on the wall may imply, I don't have all the answers.
I wouldn't trust anyone who thought that they did. Maybe you need to make her a list. 5 ways to leave a husband.
You know, subtypes. You really remind me of your mother.
She beams.
Thanks. I'll take that as a compliment.
Compliment intended. You are allowed to be happy, Carrie. You know that, don't you?
He rises and leans forward.
Your mom would want that for you.
Carrie's wide, pale blue eyes shine. From above, the skyscrapers of New York glow brightly, thousands of windows glistening in the night. Times Square swarms with people, and a sign flashes, Happy New Year. Carrie sits on her bed, reading the final page of Franny and Zoe. Smiling, she lays the hardcover on the bed before her and reaches to the bedside table to grab her instant camera, pointing it down at the book. She sets the camera and photo down and picks up her yellow sheet of notepaper, crossing an item off the list. The clock on her table shows a few minutes after 10:05.
Shit.
Now she wends her way through a crowded party.
Carrie! Oh, thank God! I thought you might never speak to me again after I abandoned you at Dex's gig. How can I ever make it up to you?
But you already did. You helped me cross something off my list.
I did? Which one?
Make a friend.
Oh!
Tara hugs her.
Okay, you're patting me a little bit. Oh, come on. I want to introduce you to Dex.
Dex?
Yeah.
Dex? Oh, a nationally registered tongue, Dex?
Okay. Oh, sorry.
Tara leads the way to her boyfriend and starts kissing him.
Oh, Carrie, this is Dex? Dex, this is Carrie.
Hi. Nice to meet you.
Oh.
They go back to kissing passionately.
He seems nice.
Yeah, he is.
I'll call you. We'll go for lunch.
Oh, I would love that.
Later.
Okay. Tara launches her tongue toward Dax's mouth and Carrie turns away. Later, she sips champagne and Douglas pops over.
Tell that.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Are you wearing eye makeup?
She bats her eyes.
It looks good.
Hey, what's the square root of 6,023?
75.
You're a freaking genius.
I made it up.
Like, what's the equation? What special equation do you use?
You know what? I'll tell you on Monday.
You're leaving?
I have a party limit, and I'm all partied out. But I'll see you later. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
He blows his noisemaker. Back in her apartment, a trail of discarded clothes leads to the bed where Carrie lies watching New Year's coverage on television. Carrie sits up in bed.
Fuck it.
In the hallway, Carrie waits for someone to answer her knocking, then a man in glasses pulls the door open.
Hi.
Hi. You must be Ted.
Ted blinks.
It's Zion.
Moved out.
What? When?
Yesterday.
Oh. Okay,
He starts closing the door.
Oh, okay, well, is there any way that I could...
Sai reopens it.
What is the matter with you? Can you not stop lying for 1 minute?
He turns to Carrie.
Hey, sorry, you see what I mean? The guy's a compulsive liar. He literally can't believe a word he says.
Nice tux.
Yeah, we had a concert. I just got back.
You didn't want to go out after?
New Year's Eve isn't really my thing.
Me neither.
Do you want to come in?
If that's okay.
Yeah, I think that could be okay.
She takes a step.
Actually, would you mind waiting here 1 second? There's just something I have to do really, really quickly. I'll be 1 minute.
Okay.
In her kitchen, Carrie goes to where the list is stuck to her fridge. She crosses off, spend New Year's Eve with someone. Carrie turns, crumpling up the completed list, and sees Sai squatting on the fire escape outside her kitchen window. She heads over to him.
You're always disappearing.
Sorry, I thought I left the stove on.
That's okay. This is a much better spot anyway.
Spot?
To watch the fireworks. They're about to start.
Carrie peers out the window.
Here, take my hand.
He helps her climb out onto the fire escape. They sit side by side.
Oh, it's freezing.
I'd loan you my coat, but someone forgot to return it.
Oh, right. Oh, I'm sorry. Shall I pop in and grab it?
You just stay right here, Carrie.
He wraps an arm around her shoulder and she snuggles against him.
So, what's Sai short for?
Cyrus. What about Carrie?
Nothing. It's just Carrie.
She leans her head against his cheek and they both gaze up at the night sky.
What's your middle name?
Carrie smiles knowingly and stares straight ahead, her eyes sparkling. Cut to black. Credits appear in cursive letters. Directed by Susan Johnson. Screenplay by Kara Holden. Based on the novel by Karen Lissner. Produced by Suzanne Farwell, PGA. Susan Johnson, PGA. Produced by Susan Cartsonis, PGA, Brent Emery, PGA. Producer, Lisa Wolofsky. Executive producers, Terry Simpson, Elaine Harris. Executive producers, Edith Myers, Nick Quested. Co-producer, Per Melita. Director of Photography, Gonzalo Amat. Production Designer, Kurt Beach. Edited by Philip J. Bartel. Costume Designer, Leslie Yarmo. Music by Michael Penn. Music Supervisor, Gary Calamar. Casting by Sig de Miguel and Stephen Vincent. Belle Powley. Vanessa Bayer.
Go on, make a mistake.
Colin O'Donohue. William Mosley. Jason Ritter. Desmond Borges. Porna Jagannathan. With Gabriel Byrne. And Nathan Lane. More credits roll.
Give the take, I'll take the give. In the middle of my coffee break. Find me on the Ferris wheel. Watching the sky turn blue. Don't you think it's about time, about time, about time. The sunshine now on you.
Characters and incidents portrayed and the names herein are fictitious, and any similarity to the name, character, or history of any person is entirely coincidental and unintentional. This motion picture photoplay is protected pursuant to the provisions of the laws of the United States of America and other countries. Any unauthorized duplication, distributing, and/or exhibition of this photoplay may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. This motion picture is being exhibited under specific license and is not for sale. Carrie Pilby Productions, LLC is the author of this motion picture for the purpose of copyright and other laws. Copyright 2016, Carrie Pilby Productions, LLC, all rights reserved. In cursive letters, Carrie Pilby.